Sutra, my dear friend, you will understand nothing. The other fellow says, I have read the Gita, I have done this, I have read the Upanishad. I have been through asanas and pranayama, and I am where I am. So in replying, he says, unless my friend you go to Yoga Sutra and understand its exposition and its practices, nothing can happen. See? So we are on such important ground. Be very serious. Come here very seriously. As I repeat again, not with your hands and feet. Come, so that as I read, as I talk to you, you see in Nitya Vimas, understand. Once you go home, 25% on the road is erased. 25% you may try it and remember. So, it's better if you bring anything here, Nitya Vimas, at the proper place, so that you guide yourself properly. I am not the loser. Since it is such a serious thing we are after, be very serious. Is there any question? Best question possible. When do we meet again in this life?
No.
20 seconds.
Yeah.
I'm talking about this meeting, a general meeting, not for phase exercise. Huh? Day after tomorrow, please try to come. Huh? For Saturday group or coming Thursday for the Thursday group. In the meantime, kindly take that book, Education for Attention.
Last Thursday.
Very good. Today we'll take up the sutras one by one. Before we begin, let us once again understand what the sutras mean. This is wood. This is stone. That is glass. This is cloth. So are chemicals. So are liquids. And all the materials found in the universe that we know of, and some we don't know about. Each one has a structure. They can't do something and they can do something. That's the structure. Steel will not burn. You can't make a sword out of wood. And so forth. Each has a structure. Each can do something, cannot do something. In the animal world, you are the fox, you are the wolf, you are the tiger, you are the lion, you are the cobra, you are the viper, you are the dolphin, you are the alligator. Each has a structure. As in the world of man, some are fox, some are lions, some are alligators, some are dolphins. That is a structure. They can't do less, they can't do more. That is the structure. You must have seen many cars, old rotten rattling Fiats, with a sticker, Honda, Mercedes, Turbo. Does that sticker change that wrestling fear into a turbo, into a Mercedes. And so, the wrestling human being, if you put a sticker here, morality, religion, philosophy, you can't just change that wrestling human being into a turbo, into a Mercedes. You can't. You have to change the structure of that individual. You get my point? Sit before that rattling fear and pray as long as you like to make it a Mercedes. It cannot be done. By going to the temple, to the mosque, to the church, the rattling fear will not become a Mercedes. You get my point? This was known to ancient India. What I translated the word in ancient sastras as structure for acceptance. The sastras say sanskar. Sanskar is structure. The structure of a wrestling fear. And by going to the church, to the mosque, to the temple, you can't become a Mercedes. No, you can't. No amount of philosophy can make you a Mercedes. No. The structure has to be changed. If the Fiat has to become a Honda, the machine is to be thrown away. The suspenders have to be changed, the tires have to be changed, the body is to be changed. It is a total transformation, a change in structure. A wrestling Fiat cannot become a Honda. No? This was known to ancient India. That structure of an individual is important. And they called it sanskar. They called it in one word, what I put as structure of acceptance with
within the spectrum.
In each species there is a maximum and a minimum. So we are within a certain spectrum. You can't expect miracles, you can't do anything beyond what you are born with as a structure. And this structure is stronger than granite. And the sastra said there is only way to change a human being is to change his structure. In modern language I've given you structure of acceptance. It also means of rejection. You will reject something, you will accept something. I don't know whether you have observed, but in the last 2-3 weeks, in the Mahabharata, only the Gita is being continued. And I am told 50% of the audience had become lukewarm. They are not interested in philosophy. Even the great Mahabharata says no more. That pool for the last 2 Sundays. Otherwise the roads were empty and there was no traffic between 9 and 10. But last 2 Sundays and the coming Sundays, philosophy does not interest. Because the structure is not there. It rejects. Whatever it cannot accept, it rejects. You get my point? This is what we have to understand in sutra. There is a possibility of changing the structure. If you have read the introduction, where we have got in words like gene, mutation, you see, it is to break and reform the structure. Unless the structure is changed, the old rattling fiat will remain an old rattling fiat. No chance ever of becoming a Honda or a Mercedes. You get my point clearly? You will say, why do I impress upon you so much about the sutra? Well, W. Judge was one of the most noted and renowned of theosophists.
perhaps next to Madame Lavatsky and Mrs. Annie Besant. Somebody wrote to him, and what that man wrote to him, I'll read out to you. A most perplexed individual is writing to you. I have been for 3 years endeavoring to study Theosophy. I have heard lectures, have read an immense amount of literature devoted to Theosophy, from the pages of old down to Sinnett's Alcott's Blavatsky of the present day. I have studied the yoga philosophy and I have read the path. Life on the path aids me not, nor does Bhagavad Gita. And why? Because I am yet without the first steps towards practice. Practice. Remember the word practice. Guide me with your friendly hints. Imagine me alone in a room. How to commence? Show me the first steps upon the practical ladder. Practical ladder. All I have heard and read seemeth to me so elaborately unintelligible that I lay it aside and beg you to instruct me in my Theosophical and Yoga ABC. A shining object is as nice to stare at. Poor fellow. A mirror is a shining object, but of what avail to stare at a mirror and see reflected my ugliness? To that, the judge replied, you say you have studied yoga philosophy, that is not enough. It is in fact the most practical system. If you refer to that of Patanjali Yoga Sutra, and one that would meet all the requirements you have in the way of difficulty. For it is one of the most difficult. It is not possible for you to judge its merits without practice, and it gives full directions. If for 3 years you study and practice it, you will find that you need no other. You get some idea about it now? That is what it is. That is why we have to study Yoga Sutra from various angles, not only exposition, but practices. Practices are very important. There are hundreds of books, hundreds of translations and expositions on Yoga Sutra. There is not one book which gives practices. Because unless a man himself has practiced and written, it's not possible. I came across a very interesting line. For your interest, I have brought them here. See some here. See some here. See some here. See some here. And let it be distributed among those who are present. It out to you. The fourth stanza describes the average man. His mass is buried in the animal mire. I have told you last time also that in the human body system there is a majority of cells that are animals. And the poet puts it very nicely. He says, his mass is buried in the animal mire. A riddle of opposites is made his field, his mind. His mind is what? He goes into the past, he goes into the future. He's a riddle of opposites. Freedom he has, but needs to live in bonds. Many of you come here so often, so often, so often. You go home, you are slaves again. To your brooding, to your this, to your that. So, the poet says, freedom he has, but needs to live in bonds. He has need of darkness to perceive some light. It is strange that nature has to give some really hard days to wake you up. Then only you cry and wake up. Without that you don't. So the poet says, he has need of darkness to perceive sunlight. Then he says, how long will you tread the circling tracks of mind around your little self and petty things? Me, mine, my family, my son, my daughter, my house, my this, my that. We have no time to come out of it. Isn't it? And yet we want to be free. We love our bondage. Not for vain repetitions were you built. We are born again and again and again in vain. Every time we are the same. Every time we are carbon copy. The way we come, the way we go. Out of immortal substance you were made. Out of divine wholeness, you are divine fragments. You forget all that. You read now, you go home and forget. Heaven is too high for outstretched hands to seize. This light comes not by struggle or by thought. In mind silence, the transcendent acts. And the hushed heart hears the unuttered word. The very first sutra, the very first sutra is so beautiful. See the very first sutra, let us read it. What does it say? The very first sutra says, yoga is achieved to the subjugation, that means healing of the psychic nature, and restraint, that means the calming of the thinking instrument. The healing of the psychic nature and the calming of the thinking instrument. And the poet says so beautifully, in the mind silence the transcendent acts, and the hushed heart hears the unuttered word. A vast surrender is the only strength. Go to the 12th chapter of the Gita, and there, what does Sri Krishna tell Arjuna? Do this, and you will come to me. If you are too weak, do this, and you will come to me. And even if you are too weak for that, do that and come to me. And if you are too weak for anything, come to me and say, oh Krishna. See what the poet says? A vast surrender is the only strength. Now we come to a sentence perhaps uttered by a prophet. How shall I rest content with mortal days and the dull measure of terrestrial things? I, who have seen behind the cosmic mask the glory and the beauty of thy face. So what does the wife reply? O singer of ultimate ecstasy, lend not dangerous vision to the blind, because by native right thou hast seen clear. Impose not on mortal stimulus breast the dire ordeal that for knowledge brings. For knowledge means all psychic power. Again the prophet pleads, and then the voice replies finally, O strong forerunner, I have heard thy cry. A seed shall be sown in that tremendous hour, in that tremendous hour. If you can come to that tremendous hour of conscious death, a branch of heaven transplant to human soil. See? A total change in structure must come. A branch of heaven transplants to human soil. The Honda must be transplanted into the pier, the wrestling pier. Nature shall overleap a mortal stair. Fate shall be changed, the unchanging fate shall be changed by an unchanging will. Beautiful. So, from all angles we come to know that the only way out is change of structure. and only philosophy will not do, only exposition will not do, only coming here and hearing me will not do, but go home and practice, practice, practice. Now we shall begin this sutra. Okay? One by one we shall take up, one by one we shall read. Now we shall begin instruction in the science of yoga. Patanjali must be also tired like me, talking, talking, talking before he began the sutra. So he says, now we shall begin. Put something on this. Now we shall begin the science of yoga. Mind you, the science of yoga meaning it's a practice in London, New York, Moscow, Paris, Bombay. You must get the same result. That is science. The science of yoga. Now begin. Yoga is attuned to the healing of the psychic nature and the calming of the thinking instrument. You get it? Yoga is attuned to the healing of the psychic nature and the calming of the thinking instrument. Now, psychic nature. We are a complex human structure. Not so simple as the animal structure is or the vegetation is. We are a very complex structure. The human body, the human brain, the psychic body, the psychic manas, and within this sits the divine segment, and we make use of the infinite mind as individual mind. This complex structure is to be healed. The physical body, the physical brain has been damaged enough by misuse, whatever you might call it. The psychic body, the psychic manas has been misused. And we do not know what that divine fragment means. Out of this complex structure, we know nothing. We know we have a physical body, we have got something like a brain, a chatterbox. That's all we have of the whole complex structure. And we are on our way to heal the entire complex structure. We want to heal what we don't know anything about. We want to heal what we don't know anything about. The healing of the psychic nature and the calming of the thinking instrument. This gray matter. From 4 million BC till today, nobody knows. Nobody knows how it operates. Nobody knows how to heal it. Nobody knows how to put it straight. Okay, go further. And this is accomplished. The man knows himself as he is in reality. What is accomplished? When the healing of the psychic nature takes place. That the calming of the thinking instrument takes place. When we have a vague idea of the divine fragment, we are in a different world. When we are there, we have some glimpse of what we are, as we were created, as we are expected to live, as human specimens. Not as fox, crocodile, lion, monkey, viper, in the form of a human being. No, not that. Up till now, the inner man has identified himself with these forms and with the external modification. It is a complex structure. The physical body and brain is the external man. The psychic body and manas is the internal man. And the divine fragment is the spiritual man. We don't know what to do with the external man. We are here to heal the internal man and one day hope to see the spiritual man. That is what we are about to do in the sutras. The thinking instrument states are five and are subject to pleasure or pain. They are painful or not painful. Okay? Up to five. Painful or not painful? The author doesn't say there is a state of happiness, there is a state of bliss. At best, it is painful or not painful. What are the five states? The five states are correct knowledge, incorrect knowledge, sensing, passivity or sleep, and memory. All five states are known as modifications. The qualities in them are in a state of turmoil. We'll say again. These modifications, that is these five states, are correct knowledge, incorrect knowledge, sensing, slip and memory. When thoughts take place, we call it modifications. But the author says, even fancy is a kind of thought, imagination. Sleep, it's also modification, there are dreams. And memory, memory is the most mysterious part of the complex human system. If I lose my memory, half the number of people I dislike, I won't know. At least that much of my brooding will be over. He said this and she said that. It is this memory that is treacherous. We want to be good. We have heard somewhere that you have not to do this, you have not to go home and want to be good. And suddenly somebody comes, we know, oh God, where has he come now? And he starts some mischief and you are out. Your temper goes, you say something. Because your memory is wedded to your past, thinking about that person. So you cannot expect anything good from that person. So you are ready to react. Therefore, memory is the worst of five modifications. Incorrect, the basis of correct knowledge is correct perception, correct deduction, correct witness and accurate evidence. Okay. Incorrect knowledge is based upon perception of the form and not upon the state of being. When in the Mahabharata, the Bhimanyu is dead and Arjuna asked Krishna, I want to see a woman. Krishna says, if I show him, will you recognize him? He said, my son, I can't recognize him. He had 1,000 bodies and 1,000 names before. One of them was Abhimanyu. Will you know him if I show him? deceive Abhimanyu only.
But then say intellect knowledge is based upon perception of the form and not upon the state of being. Arjuna cries about Abhimanyu, not knowing that it's a name and a form of the thousand yen.
But inside of Abhimanyu, the essence, how will he know? All essences are same. All divine segments are same. All souls are same. Sense rests upon images which are not real exist. See your neighbor, he is rich, and you plan of buying some master lottery and then dream that I'll do this and I'll do that. That is fancy. When we are not successful in life, when we are hurt, we take solace in fancy. When you fail, we dream of success. When you are down and under, we dream to think of money. We dream. Sense. During day, we fancy. During night, we dream. And all the time we think, I must have moksha. From there. Sleep is based upon the quiescent state of the riddhis, that is, upon the non-perception of the senses. Sleep at night. There's a junction box here which puts off the switch, and the five senses are not supposed to disturb the grey matter, so that we can sleep soundly.
But we get dreams.
We get dreams. Even the junction box is faulty. It's a rattling old fear that it wants to be hung up. So, we dream at night because the junction box is not properly disconnected, and something comes and we dream, and there also it's fancy. The control of these modifications of the internal organs, the thinking instrument, is to be brought about through tireless endeavor and through not attachment. Oh, I'm not at 11, sorry. Memory is holding on to that which has been known. Holding on. You hold on. Memory is harmless. Memory is harmless, it is necessary. Otherwise, if you all come here and say, hey, why have you come? I don't know you, go home. So memory is necessary, I must know you. But holding on to you, that's right. Holding on to that type of memory is harmful. That will lead to daydreaming, that will lead to brooding, that will lead to so many other things. Will instigate us to action connected with past emotions, past events. That is matter. So the most important word is holding on to. If you do not hold on to memory, let it flow like the waters of a river. Let it flow. The control of these modifications of the internal organ, the thinking instrument, is to be brought about through tireless endeavor and through non-attachment. Tireless endeavor. That fellow, Continental Tires, he gives a big advertisement and he says, the tireless tire. After 15,000 kilometers, it will be punctured. That type of tireless endeavor is not required. It is non-stop. Ever non-stop. You get my point? Tireless endeavor. Not the tireless tire. Huh? And by non-attachment. Non-attachment. Holding on to memory is attachment. Holding on to memory is attachment. father, brother, house, money. This is all memory.
Holding on to memory.
Non-attachment. Have everything, be a millionaire, billionaire, but then that is no attachment, no holding on to. If it comes, well and good. If it goes, well and good. See that? If it has come to me, I must have been a brilliant man. If it goes, I must be a fool. Look at it. Okay. Now, tireless endeavor is the constant effort to restrain the modifications of the thinking instrument. Get an idea? Between peak hours, the police have put up board. No stopping, no parking. No stopping, parking is blown. No stopping. So, tireless endeavor is the constant effort to restrain the modifications of the thinking instrument. The thinking, the breathing, the circulation of the blood. These are non-stopping. They don't stop for a moment. If they take a holiday, we are gone. You must have a Sunday. Because you get so tired after 6 days. The heart that breathes, the lung that breathes, and the circulation, they do not stop for a moment. You must have an endeavor equally non-stop, that will not stop for a moment.
I have told you
in the second line of sutra, I also have said, in place of subjugation, write heaving, and in place of restraint, write calming. I have told you, last month I told you. So, calming, that endeavor must be non-stop. If you work for 23 hours, then 1 hour this mischief maker of a brain will have all the mischief done. For all the 24 hours non-stop, your endeavor must be there. Or type of endeavor. Now comes. No, we first go to 15. Non-attachment is the freedom from longing of all the objects of desire, either earthly or traditional, either here or hereafter. Non-attachment is what? Freedom from longing. It's a state of mind. You may have millions, billions. Freedom. Freedom from attachment. You get the point here? Freedom from longing for objects. They're there. It's good to work for it, it's good to get it, use it, enjoy it. But what? Freedom from longing. Don't hold on to anything. Understand? That is non-attachment. Then we go to 14. When the object to be gained is sufficiently valued and the efforts towards its attainment are persistently followed. We stop here. In science today, the most important laws are thermodynamics. The first law of thermodynamics, the second law of thermodynamics. Now, say Patanjali gives you law after law here. The first law he states is, when the object to be gained is sufficiently valued, what will happen? The efforts towards its attainment are persistently followed. Whether it is a material object, non-material object, spiritual object, if the object to be gained is sufficiently valued, you will automatically put in efforts. You get the point, that is the first law of the sutra. What does it say? When the object to be gained is sufficiently valued, the efforts towards its attainment are persistently followed. Immaterial, what that object is. You may gain for $1,000,000 or you may gain for spiritual upliftment, you can gain anything. But if your aim that thing is really worth having, if the object to be gained is sufficiently valued, you must value that object. It's no use by talking to you here. A sutra is not valued by you, then you will not put in that persistent effort. If you value the sutras sufficiently, then your efforts will become automatic and continuous. So what does the first law say? When the object to be gained is sufficiently valued, efforts towards its attainment are persistently followed without intermission. Without intermission. There is not a waiting for a moment. Understand? Now he takes up from the spiritual angle. He adds it. What does he add now? Then the steadiness of the thinking instrument and the calming of the rittis is secure. If this is what you value, if you value that the steadiness of the thinking instrument and the strength of the modifications is very necessary, if you value this, then according to the first law, your efforts will be automatically non-stop. You must value what you want. What are your priorities? What do you want first? Wife, son, what do you want first? The calming of the modification, the calming of the thinking instrument. If that is what you value most, then your efforts will be non-stop in that direction. Understand? I repeat again this beautiful sutra. When the object to be gained is sufficiently valued, the efforts towards its attainment are persistently followed without intermission, then the steadiness of the thinking instrument, that is the strength of the rittis, is secure. The consummation of the non-attachment results in exact knowledge of the spiritual man, then liberated from the qualities of guna. The first word, consummation. A man is consummated, perfected, fulfilled. When the two separate, the first question the judge asks, is the marriage consummated? If not, there is no question. Divorce is clear. But in spite of that, why? Consummated. When the non-attachment is consummated, it is fulfilled. If you can live your life, worldly life, beautifully, but without attachment, that means the non-attachment is perfected. What happens then? Results in exact knowledge of the spiritual man. You get some hazy idea about the spiritual man. He says, exact idea, but he is saying something more. When liberated from the qualities of guna, then liberated from the qualities of guna. Ask any man who is trying to go on the path of spirituality, and the first thing he will say is, I want to get rid of tamas and rajas. I want to accumulate sattva. What will happen? There is imbalance. He will be like this. When he will walk, he will walk like this. Because sattva is bending him here. Rajas and tamas is no more here. He must walk like this. He must balance both. And in the sutra, it is not mentioned that you have to get rid of tamas and rajas. It says, when liberated from the qualities. That means nothing, even sattva should not become an attachment. Even the vision of God should not be an attachment. One day Lakshmi told God Vishnu, I have millions of devotees, I don't know how many of you, I don't think you have five also.
So Vishnu said, I'll find out. So he came on earth and ran from place to place to place to place. Everybody was worshipping Lakshmi. Nobody cared for poor Vishnu. At last he came across a man, one man, who was a great devotee of Vishnu. Ah, he said, I've found you. Ask anything from me. That man had reached